Welcome to Ahead of the Game, a podcast brought to you by the Digital Marketing Institute. I'm your host, Will Francis, and today I'll be talking to Zach O'Rourke, all about mental wellness for social media pros. Zach is the founder and director of Social Directions, an Irish-based social media agency. Zach and his team work with clients across multiple service and product-based industries, and he believes that content is the currency in achieving your 2023 marketing goals. Zach, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Will. I'm not too bad. Excited to be here today.
Good. Yes, it's great to have you. We've talked a little bit about mental well-being in marketing, but I think everyone would agree, probably not enough. So I'm really happy to be talking to you about that today. And I think you're in a great place to tell us about that. Before we do, just set the scene. Tell us what it is that you do and how you got there.
Yeah, it's definitely not a straight path to where I'm at today. So obviously, I am director of a social media agency based in Dublin in Ireland at the moment. And my journey in marketing started off, really, it dates back to possibly about 10 years ago when I was in college. I was studying computer science, went down that direction just because I was told, you know, you are a computers guy, you're a techie guy, you should head into learn how to code. So I went that direction, but I soon learned that wasn't for me. I was in college, I was possibly about 3 years into college, I'd failed my second year, I was struggling with the passion for wanting to do computer science, to be honest. I'm more of a person that I'm 100% if I enjoy it. So I was going through college and I decided to pick up a camera. Actually, it was around the time YouTube was super big. A lot of YouTubers were coming out there and I was quite fascinated by the fact that you could pick up a camera and create a video of your own, edit it by yourself and get it onto a platform, almost like, you know, being on TV, but without the need for the complexity. So I started doing that, just building a YouTube channel, like dabbling with the world of personal branding. Didn't really understand what personal branding was at the time, but I knew I could pick up a camera, I could create an idea from scratch myself. So I started doing that on the side of doing my college degree, and that got picked up. A few people started, you know, recognizing I was on YouTube, but they recognized in the way that they wanted me to film little ads for their business, you know, little walkthroughs of a business, 30-second videos, and they would pay me for this. So I was like, on one side, I've got this 4-year course in college in computing, and on the other, I have making videos, which I actually get paid money for and I love. So I finished the course, but at the same time, I launched a business in video production, which was very interesting business, just started working with the world of content creation. Soon after finishing college, moved across to Canada, had to pack in the first ever business, which was called Zora Productions. And sad time, but I just, unfortunately, without contacts in Canada, I couldn't keep it up. And I jumped into a corporate job in recruitment for 2 years. But about 18 months into that job, I just realized that, like, I looked at social media and I was looking and I was thinking, there's so many brands just that need to do it better. You know, the standard I felt was quite poor. And I said, I was just kind of struggling with working the 9-to-5 as well. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to try go into content creation again, but I'm going to try go in a way that I can get people onto retainers and earn some money frequently every month. And that's when I started to basically create content for brands, but also manage it on social media. And the reason I was managing it for them on social was just because I wanted repetitive work. It wasn't really because I wanted to, it wasn't for the love of social. But then, you know, over time, I really started to enjoy the process of building a brand and not just building content reserves, but actually taking that from start to finish and the idea of building a strategy. So, you know, that's a long story kind of squeezed. But to date, you know, that's what I've been doing for years since now, is just building and building and building an agency. And I think it was good timing as well, because content seems to be the currency now in social media.
Yeah, more than ever. And you know what? Still today, most brands, or certainly a lot of brands that are well known, are doing social media very badly, and they're getting horrendous engagement rates. Like, you know, I teach about this stuff, and I use examples of major brands everyone's heard of that have got like a million followers on Facebook, and their posts are getting like 7 likes sometimes. How does that happen? Why are a surprising amount of brands still doing social media badly? What do you think the key reasons for that are?
I think there's a couple of reasons, but the first one I'd say is people built their socials very fast. They built followings very fast over the last 10 years. And in the beginning, I felt like it was just get as many followers as possible. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter if they're your target customer or not. I don't know if you remember the rage where it was just people buying followers left, right and center because it was like a flex to have 10K followers. So going down that way has left businesses with, let's say, for example, 100,000 followers with, and 97,000 of those followers are people that are never going to buy the product or service. So the way the algorithms are working now, when they rely on pushing content out and the engagement based off that content, there's 97,000 people that are seeing that content have no interest. So it flops. You know, that would be, you know, like one of the core reasons I feel like things aren't doing well for these bigger companies. And I was going to say the second reason is just businesses haven't fully understood the shift of providing value in content. They're still stuck in the sell. And because there's so much content out there these days, I just feel like you have to be giving something for someone to want to give to you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're spoiled for choice for great content on the internet. So why would we waste our time and attention looking at mediocre content from brands, right?
Exactly. Like if you think about TikTok at the moment, like why is it that you get so engulfed in that platform? It's because you're constantly receiving. You're not being sold to. You might be very subtly, but you're receiving entertainment. You know, you're learning the most random DIY hack that you didn't need to know, but you know now, and it's like the best thing ever. You know, or you're laughing your head off or something. So I just think that's why we see TikTok doing so well. It's because they've nailed that value thing, and that's where what businesses haven't nailed.
And thinking about the process, because for me, I wonder if the process is broken. I wonder if brands are stuck on a treadmill of posting and they've got this quantity quota that we must get 5 Instagram posts up a week, etc. And that quantity kind of rules, and it's at the cost of everything else like quality, engagement, etc. And it's like they daren't stop posting even though they're getting like 7 likes on a post. They just have to keep it up. They're terrified of someone thinking they've disappeared or gone away.
Yeah, it does seem that way. You know, and we all go through that. We all go through that fear of, oh no, I haven't posted. You know, people are going to think I'm not into this anymore. I'm not committed. Whereas the reality is people are all too busy. They're too busy in their lives to really notice how much a brand is posting on social, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think a lot of brands would do well to just go away for a few weeks or a month and actually work out what their audience would actually really appreciate in their feeds, right?
Yeah, this is what I'm talking a lot about with my clients at the moment is like, hold on a second. Why do you want to post 16 posts a month? Why do you want to be active every second day? Why don't we really dial this back and like, let's just be active twice a week. But when we're active, we are like, we're great. Like we are like giving that follower the most, such incredible information that no one else is doing. And, you know, I find that extra capacity, if the client agrees, of course, allows us to just show up and receive more growth in terms of follower growth, impressions and actual generation of leads and sales, but with less effort.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's quality over quantity. It comes down to being as simple as that, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is obviously too much. People are always in two different minds. Just sometimes it is quality over quantity, and then sometimes people say quantity over quality. But from my personal opinion, running the agency, I always think just the quality you can put out is key.
Yeah. Okay. So in running the agency, what are, you know, thinking about that your mental well-being, etc. Let's just start to crack that open a bit. What are the main pressures that are on you that potentially keep you up at night, metaphorically, if not literally?
Literally is fair as a fair statement, right, okay. When you run an agency in digital marketing, or you like social media marketing just never stops, you know. And for me, you know, you might have people running one or two pages themselves. I'm running, you know, multiple dozen pages every day for clients, you know.
Wow.
And that's a lot on your shoulders. I would say having a team and breaking the skill sets for me into copywriter, design team, planning team, ads team has really helped. But I think knowing that social media never stops is a really important thing for me anyway, as an agency owner, because you can go all day long in running social media accounts and you can stress about everything. But the reality is, you know, you have to take a break and you have to realize that at a certain time of the day that you need to stop and switch off those social media platforms, because as much as I love them and as much as I'm in this industry, I do realize they're detrimental for your mental health. That's for sure.
And what do clients think about that? Is there a client expectation that someone will be around 24/7?
I struggle with this, and for any age or for anyone that's getting started in social media, you'll always work with the people that expect too much in the beginning. You know, the people that expect a response at 11 p.m. on a Saturday night, or the people that text you at 7 a.m. in the morning and want the response. But for me, setting very clear boundaries was a fundamental part of when we really accelerated our growth, because me and the team are in a much better mindset. You know, when it comes to our messaging hours are for our clients to communicate are between, you know, 9 and 6 p.m. After that, we are out of those chats where we're communicating over stuff, you know, that is pushed to the next day. So we rely, you know, we're big into our manual posting on social media. We will schedule things if it's after our hours. We try to avoid it, but we will do it so that we do set clear boundaries between, you know, being online and having the clients respond and want to get in contact with us.
Yeah, and I think that's good. You know, clients need to understand you're human. Yeah, yeah. You know, and there is that's, you know, you have to respect that. And that's interesting. You avoid using scheduling platforms where possible, and you prefer to post manually with the phone in your hand on the actual platform or on your laptop. Why is that?
Yeah, this is something I've always felt this way. I've dabbled a little in scheduling platforms, but the reason is when we post content on a platform, I think it's very important to be present at that time to capture the initial bit of exposure, to capture any initial comments, because I believe, and you know, it's never fully confirmed, but the algorithm picks up on how much engagement is happening initially and makes that decision to push further if there's good engagement or not. Essentially, the valuation of good content, bad content, it's quite simple for the algorithm. So that's why we get on, we post the post, and let's say it's Instagram, we post the story as well. We'll do a bit of engagement. We'll just comment on a couple of people's posts. And I feel that just gives the initial casting of the hook to reel the net in. And that's why I've always been that way. And I don't think things are going to change. You know, I think manually being, you know, you have to be active on the platform if you want to get the results, you know.
At the risk of sounding like some cheesy keynote speaker, it's social media, not media.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true, isn't it? And it's funny. I'm glad you said that, because I feel like I'm in the minority. I tell my delegates and students not to use scheduling platforms unless they really have to, because I don't think it's just about the algorithm. I think that's a point as well. It's the mindset that then lets you fall into, that social media is this thing that you just program at arm's length. You don't really get too involved. You just have this very arm's length relationship with it, and it all looks nice in the spreadsheet and the planning tool, and then you just kind of walk away and get on with the rest of your marketing. And not getting involved is such a clear signal to the algorithm that you're not properly turning up and you're not a worthwhile contributor to that platform.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Imagine social without people on it.
Right. Which is obvious when you talk about it, but it's amazing how many people think it's this like just free marketing channel that you can just sort of program at arm's length and walk away from. So part of that is engagement. You know, again, I'm always banging on to people, you have to spend at least 10%, if not 20% of the time you allocate to social engaging, not creating content, just engaging with others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you agree with that? And what? How do you manage that with your clients?
Yeah, so from the beginning of when I started making proposals, and especially in the beginning, I was like, you know, when you're just getting into this world and you haven't done much courses and experience like me, it was a bit of guessing, you know. But one thing I knew from the beginning was that community engagement is a fundamental part of time that goes into running a social media account. So I've always factored in at least 4 hours a week for running social media platforms, you know, for basically putting. I've always, between myself in the beginning and now, we have a team that does that, that just sit on their phone. It's almost like the dream job for some people. They get to sit on their phone, browse the client's social media, and just think like the client. You know, we know what the client's target audience is, and we know how they speak, and we spend a lot of time putting that into responding to comments, maybe putting comments on potential customers' posts, and just being active. You know, it's just a case, it's not like reinventing the wheel. It's not a complex task. It's just being on the platform. And I think people forget to spend time on social media platforms, and there's results in that, you know?
Well, look, if you were a creator again, you know, and that was your job and your rent check depended on it, that's what you'd do. That's what anyone trying to build a social account out in the real world would do, right?
Yeah.
And again, why brands think they don't have to do that is beyond me. What else do you think? Do you think we can learn from creators? Do you think there's a lot brands can learn from the way that creators run social and do their thing?
Yeah, I think creators are like, and this is possibly why I am where I'm at today, because I started as a creator. So I think like a creator. But a creator always starts, especially the new people, are starting with no product or service often. They're just starting with the ability to make content. And it's fascinating what they do when they have nothing to sell. That is exactly what real social media content is. You know, they are forced to entertain people or to provide value or to inspire or to do something without actually selling. So if brands could look, I always say to my client, you know, like, we're selling a small space, maybe 20, 25% of the time. The rest of the time, we're doing other things. Brands should be looking at creators to fill that 75 to 80% of the other things, as I call it. And creators are a great example. You know, they're the people they should be looking at or looking to work with to help with their socials.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a leading question because I totally agree. Like the way creators plan, create, publish, follow up on content, the way that they use comments as input for the next video. I mean, the way that creators do this is the way it should be done because their end goal is to build an audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what a brand wants, but they can't help but ruin it by shoehorning this other goal in of like, well, we want to sell some stuff. It's like, well, that would be loads easier if you had an audience. So why don't we just focus on building an audience in social, and that can assist all your other marketing channels, including paid, you know?
Yeah, I've advised clients in the past. I ran a talk recently on TikTok and the question of, is TikTok for your business? And I was giving advice to a lot of the business owners I was saying, okay, well, look, how many followers do you want to get on TikTok? What do you see as success? And a lot of them were saying 10,000 would be great. You know, that's the goal. And I was saying, well, why don't you actually start as a creator account and take advantage of all the creator tools? I said, the downside is you will not get the link to your website on it, but that forces you to think and act like a creator. You get to use the better opportunities and sounds. You get to use the trends, the filters, everything as a creator, and you grow like a creator. And then at that point, you do the switch over to the business. And it was interesting. Some people, that really puts people in a corner. They're like, can we do social and think like a creator, you know?
That's really good. Yeah, I love the fact you're actually pushing people to think about it like that, right? That's great. Love
that. It's not always the easiest because people obviously want to pull revenue from social platforms as quick as possible, you know? So it can be difficult.
Well, okay, as quick as possible. There's an interesting question. If you were to take my business on as a client today, how long would you advise that you know, how long would you warn me that I'm going to have to wait before I start seeing commercial results if it's just organic content that we're putting up, no ads?
If it's just organic and no ads, I'd be advising TikTok straight away to take advantage of that algorithm and starting as a creator. It's such a tough question because it really depends on the product and the service and if it's something that's needed in the market, you know. If it's another clothes brand coming out there, you are like in a tough market to break into. But if it's a new gadget that will help solve people's problems fast, you know, it's taken us organically. It takes us about 6 months to build an account to about 10,000 followers. So that would be the only viable answer I have to give you.
That's a good answer. Yeah. No, that's perfect. Because that's about the point at which we feel like we're starting to, or should be building some momentum that feels.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. 6 months. And do you advise sprinkling some paid ads into that mix to speed things up or to perhaps bring some of those commercial results, particularly for obviously e-commerce brands?
Yeah, so I made a few changes in the agency about 2 years ago, and we can talk about the second in a bit if you'd like, which is we only work with clients that we create content for. But the first change was around paid advertising. I think it's very important to have some sort of paid advertising budget to. Right. And mainly just because around the data, you know, you learn so much from paid ads. You know, you get to, if I spend €100 a month even on paid ads, I can target my exact demographic audience, their location, their age, their gender, if I want. And I can then throw out that and test and feedback results as to who resonated with it. So I've thrown out who I think is perfect for me. Now, who's actually buying, you know, who's coming to the website or who's going down the path that I see as my, you know, my viable way of selling to them. So that's why I love paid ads, is because it just gives it really clean data back to
so me. You use it as a sort of experimental playground to find stuff out, because you can be so specific about who you show stuff to, what you show to them, A, B, C, D, test that, see if they bought, et cetera, et cetera. You've got that very clear, like you say, clean data, that very clear view.
We look at this data and then we take that straight back to the content creation process, you know. So I think that just gives me lots of great information. And for every client we work with, we just, like, even if some clients don't have a budget or an interest in paid ads, but I just always ask that we have something small just to do that bit of testing with, to take advantage of that feature.
Okay, cool. So just out of interest, how do you sell your services? Do you tell me that it's going to be a certain number of hours per month and I pay based on an hourly rate, or is it just these sort of packages and tiers and things like that?
Yeah, so on the back end, for between like the team, we know how many hours is expected to go into running a social media plan. We don't typically share that with the client because the client gets a bit focused on the numbers, you know, on the numbers of how much investment is going in time. And in my opinion, if I can do something in 8 hours or 1 hour, but the same result is the same, then why does it really, you know, does it really matter to the client? So I just use that as a way of measuring how much team time I need to run that account. But for the client, we often break down our packages in the way of, you know, an entry package would just be, say, you know, you're going to post organically 8 times a month. We're going to have 8 different topics created. We're going to run your paid ads. We're going to, you know, we're going to give you your report and then just the standard stuff. And then as you go up, we might run ads on more platforms for them. We might do more posting. We might film more often as well. So it's just down to what sort of volume that client wants to get. But these suggestions are always based off what the client wants first. You know, I don't quote to a client, you can't log onto my website and say, oh, Zach's packages are bronze, silver, gold, and X, X, X. It's really important to know what is the problem with the client before I tell them what the cost is to try fix that problem.
Right. Okay. And so what sort of metrics are you reporting? Are they the same for most people, or is it, again, just tailored to what the client's needs, challenges, and brief is?
Yeah, often we focus on three different metrics for a client, which will change. But I'm always looking in regularly every week. I'm looking at where we're at versus what the client wants. So for a client in the service industry, you know, that might be how many leads are coming in the door for that client. So that's what the client wants to know. I want to know what the cost per lead is. So, but I'm just sharing, you know, how many leads for them. I might be sharing with them how many followers we're gaining for that client. And I might be sharing, you know, how many website visitors we're getting. I try to focus on the metrics that really, I actually call them the metrics that matter for the client, because it's just, at the end of the day, the client wants to know how much revenue is coming in. And often they want to know how much the page is growing. That's a secondary yeah. fundamental thing for that client.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. But with the caveat that revenue is not going to start coming in from month one in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's I do flag that with them when I'm starting. I think it's really important to flag with a client in the beginning that, look, you're not going to achieve these goals that you've set out from day one. You know, yeah. So I map out where they'd like to go. And then I say, you know, for the first few months, we cannot promise you these. We will absolutely try. And I've often smashed it from, you know, the first week, first month with a client, and got the results. But I always just, I think it's really important to be very honest and say, like, we can't control these. These are uncontrollable things, but we can do our best to get the momentum in the right direction.
Yeah, good. Very good. Sounds great. Sounds like you've got that very nailed down. But it is quite, we live in a very fast-paced, fluid digital landscape. We always have, but, you know, arguably now more so than ever. And you're always looking for ways to really give those metrics that matter a boost. So you're looking for trends, right? Mm-hmm. Trending sounds, trending memes, trending conversations of some sort, cultural moments. How do you keep on top of that?
Yeah, I think platforms are starting to really support people getting on trends quicker. If we look at the TikTok Creative Center at the moment, they're like giving you industry specific trends for your business. So we actually weekly are looking at that, you know, like we'll in the beginning of the week, we're just seeing, okay, what's actually come out at the moment. Also, just being a consumer of social media content is a great way of learning what's trending, because as you scroll TikTok mindlessly at 10 o'clock on a Friday evening, you're like seeing what's working. Like you yourself are the product that's taking in this information. So as an agency, we take what's trending and we just tweak it for the client. You know, like as you like say, the Barbie theme was out recently, and we have a client in the furniture space. So we took the hi Barbie sound effect, and we put the client's sofas in a Barbie box with the trend and just rotated, you know. But initially I discovered that trend through a creator I follow on TikTok. So I find just by being a consumer on social media, that's often the best way of just identifying trends and spinning them off then into different clients' industries.
True, but that in itself obviously creates an always on pressure. Mm-hmm. There's that thing, that a feeling of FOMO constantly, maybe something's blowing up and I don't know about it yet. Maybe I'll just reach for my phone. How do you keep on top of that? Tell us about how you sort of stay sane, really, yourself, just personally, amidst that pressure.
The noise of social.
Yeah.
I think for me, my phone in particular, like my notifications will be off for all social media platforms. That was a really big game changer for me. Now, the only reason I've managed to do that is because I'm not managing the community for the clients. You know, that was that gives me a lot of control as to when I access social media platforms. And I know you were talking about trends and how I can kind of spot trends without having to be engulfed in social media the whole time. I think there's great software out there for doing that. Like, say, you know, the three I'd be using at the moment are the Creative Center on TikTok. I'd be using Foreplay to identify what competition is using in their paid advertising, which is often will often be a trend as well. And then I'd be using the Facebook ads library too. So there's certain things I can kind of lean on if I need trends fast. But yeah, from me switching off, it is just around the turning off the notifications and being strict when I'm working and when I'm not, because the best ideas come when you're not working.
Yeah, that's true. So you sort of keep digital in a well-defined box.
Yeah, I think my hobbies have changed as I've grown in this industry. Is I tend to do things in my spare time that are phoneless things. You know, two of my favorite things to do are CrossFit, where I get screamed at if there's a phone in the room, and sea swimming. Whereas you're a phone down if you bring it into the sea. So you know. it's forced me to start to really look at what I do. Before the digital running an agency, I was big into bodybuilding in the gym, but I had to kind of change that because I'd be going into the gym and just scrolling Instagram or social for so long, and it wasn't a good place. I wasn't getting out of it what I needed, you know.
That's interesting. And in terms of like burnout, which is something I think a lot of people in digital either approach, come close to, or actually full on experience. How do you help yourself? I mean, you've talked about that already a bit, but also your staff. Is there anything you do in your company culture that you think in any way protects your staff from digital burnout?
I think from the team's point of view, the best thing I've done is be very strict as to what they do in social, you know, having the roles split up. Because the most stressful place and the closest I've ever been to burnout was when I was wearing many hats in the social media world. You know, I was the designer, the videographer, the editor, and I was doing absolutely everything to run it. So the team in general would never cross over roles, and that has really helped. And then from a team point of view as well, is just I encourage them to I would just be pretty annoyed with them if they're replying to clients after hours, you know, that sort of thing. Like, right. I set a good example because they won't see me replying and I expect them to do the same. So just having the boundaries as to when you're online and working versus offline has really helped.
Oh, that's good. That's great. It is about the example you set, isn't it? It's not always about what you say to people. You know, if they see you replying to a client after hours, they think, well, I might as well too. And because it feels like a small, easy thing to do, but you don't realize that over time that just, it becomes a bigger thing somehow, doesn't it? It kind of bleeds into your personal life, you know?
Absolutely. Like, you know, you could be having the best weekend ever. You're so relaxed. You're just watching. You're with your partner on the sofa watching a film. And then, boom, the client chat pings and they say, like, why did that post go up? Or there's a spelling mistake in the post. And that can ruin your entire weekend, you know. So it's just you have to be so careful about that space, you know, and especially in the digital world as well, a lot of the clients tend to be in your WhatsApp groups and stuff like that. There's a bit of crossovers to the channels of communication. So it's something you have to be so proactive about is staying away from the toxic side of running social media and working in social media marketing.
But what about if there is a spelling mistake on a Sunday, or what about if there's a comment with some really awful, you know, abuse in it or something? I mean, is there any sort of emergency hotline?
You're looking at him.
All right.
I'm the emergency hotline. I think we put a lot of, in the beginning, there used to be mistakes would get through, especially when it was just me. You know, I am not great at copywriting, and I'll happily hold my hand up. So mistakes would get through. We try rely on heavily on like things like Grammarly and things like double checking, you know, like two ways of, I can't think of the exact term here, but when you basically two checks before it can
proofreading, basically.
Yeah, proofreading essentially. Yeah. So we do avoid it, but I would encourage the teams to be logged out of the chats during the weekend. So if a message does creep through, which to be fair, it's rare, it will be me. And that's something I haven't learned to avoid yet. You know, I will just jump in and resolve the issue.
Yes. No, I get that.
That's the beauty of being the business owner. You don't fully escape, you know, you never will.
You never clock off, but that's... That is part of the trade-off for running a business, right? We do understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it strikes me that you you might be, are you younger than a lot of your clients?
Oh, yeah. Age? Yeah. Yeah. I would be younger than all my clients. Yeah.
And your staff probably are as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I almost use that as a selling point that we're like in with social, you know, like, like there's this kind of stereotype that like, oh, it's the young kids that know and understand social. And rarely in a working environment does youth go in your favor, but in social media marketing, it seems to work. It's a great selling point. So
it is a great selling point. Yeah, absolutely. We somehow wouldn't be so sure if you rocked up and you were all like 55-year-old grey guys in suits. Like, sorry, really? You're the social agency. So that is great. But also that sort of age difference and that maybe cultural difference, is that ever a problem because they don't get it, for want of a better phrase, and you know, you're trying to simultaneously be taken seriously and have gravitas and like, I know I'm younger than you, but you got to listen to me on this, or any of that kind of stuff?
I have learned to, over time, and this all comes with, you know, having more case studies and more experience, I've learned to really push back, you know, because clients, especially with trending music, I've noticed this, or with trends in general, you'll show that you've put all the effort in, you know, you've got the video content ready and you show the client, and they're like, oh, I don't get it. Like, what is that? Like, you know, like say the Wes Anderson trend is like, why have you got my team just standing with a plain face all around the store?
And it's like, out of context, that's bonkers.
Because it's bonkers, yeah. And that's where I struggle. But I have learned and built relationships with clients to just say, just please trust me on this. And I think that is key, you know, just an element of trust. I can certainly say that I will make sure that content does well when the client trusts me. You know, we make sure that we are absolutely firing on all cylinders when that client content goes up, and we just ensure it performs.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because if you really push for buy-in on something, it's got to do well, hasn't it? You know, what if it flops? It's like, exactly, oh, wouldn't it be awful to be proven wrong by someone after fighting for it?
The beauty of being an agency owner is you've access to so many social media accounts that you can like rig the algorithm and make a content perform, make a piece of content. So I will never have a content that I vouch for underperform.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So things like Barbie and the Wes Anderson meme and et cetera, these things come up. Mm. Do your team's creative juices ever just run completely dry and you're like, do you know what? I have no idea what we're going to do with this. I mean, clearly people are doing something with it, but sometimes it feels like, I don't know what original thing I can offer to this.
Yeah, and look, that is the case sometimes. Sometimes you just can't get on a trend, like, and that's okay too. I think there's this kind of misconception in the industry that like you have to be every platform nailing everything. But the reality is sometimes it's just not possible. You know, I only get my clients on trends if it suits the client, you know, to bring it back to say the Wes Anderson, if some of my clients don't want to be on camera. So I like creating that trend was a tough one for them, and then we just let that pass them. So I always just see as it feasible, you know, and our content planning and stuff is we always try to do that at the beginning of a week when we're all in kind of good form and we're all having a good time, and we try to do that in a different location outside the office so that it's an enjoyable experience, because I do agree like it's very hard to come up with good ideas if you're just not feeling it as well. So we treat that as that's an important part of the week.
That's interesting. That's very interesting to hear that you take that creative brainstorming ideation seriously.
Yeah, and I would never push that on just one person. You know, that is a group effort. So that way, if say Mary is not feeling the creative feeling today, then maybe I'm feeling 120% today. So I'm going to carry your slack. So there's never, I would never let it sit on anyone and be like, come up with the good ideas. You know, it's not always the case.
How can I be more creative?
How can you be more creative? It's great. It's funny. I think I'm more creative when I spend less time on social. You know, I just think when you have your own personal life down and you're in a good place, that's when I'm most creative. Yeah. My ideas, like you know, people say like the best ideas come to them in the shower and stuff, and it's the truth, you know. You just need to learn to have balance, and that's where you do get more creative, you know. There's a lot of inspiration online as well. You know, you can't deny the fact that there's a lot of people doing things really well online, and looking and knowing who your competition is a great way of seeing, you know, what they're doing and seeing how you can put your spin on it as well for the days that you are really struggling to come up with ideas.
Well, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know this is the cliche of, yeah, creative people like rock stars and stuff living really chaotic lives. But I think there's something to be said for, yeah, having a good amount of sleep and feeling good and feeling healthy and alive tends to, I think, in a lot of cases, make people more creative. And when we spoke before this podcast, you said how you'd actually dramatically reduced your alcohol consumption. Tell me about that. Tell me about sort of lifestyle changes that you think you've had to make to deal with the pressure of running an agency, and yeah, why that is.
Yeah, I think this is the first business I've properly seen substantial growth in, and maybe this is pressure with just growing a business or pressure with running a social media agency. But I've noticed there's just a lot of demand on me all the time, you know, a lot of questions coming from different team members, a lot of clients expecting, you know, me to be there. And, you know, when I was younger, I would get away with just being brain foggy for a while, you know, for days on end, especially in college. Especially when you're in college doing a degree you're not actually that interested in, you know, that's when you find yourself having drinks more often. But over time, I rely heavily on my brain, you know, and on my ability to, you know, have, you know, a lot of creativity and a lot of organization and a lot of energy. So I've spent a lot of time just starting to make adjustments into my life. For example, I'm wearing a Whoop at the moment. This is a more recent investment for me, which is just where I'm wearing this 24/7, and this is monitoring how stressed I am, as you know, how stressed I am, how much sleep I've had, how much exertion I put on my body, and I'm using that data to really make adjustments. Recently, the poor dog got kicked out of the bed because our sleep was my fiance Shauna, she was not happy, but our sleep was down a lot, and we moved the dog out of the bed, and the sleep went up by 15% every night, so it was substantial. And if anyone here who wears a Whoop knows, if you drink alcohol and have, you know, a night out, you're at 1% recovery the next day. Like, that's red. So just seeing that sort of information multiple times kind of made me really question the decision to go drinking, you know, on the weekends.
God, yeah, absolutely. You're right. Your brain is your main tool, really. And you do have to look after it, I think.
Yeah, like, look, I know I'm in the process of building a business, and I have great goals and dreams with this business, and I just want to give it up my all at the moment. Like, people watching this or listening might be thinking, God, what a bore. Like, you know, he's just working all the time and trying to fine tune the body. But I'm okay with that, because I will get back to, you know, being more relaxed and partying and just having that life. But that's just where my head is at the moment. I just want to get the most out of myself. And I make every decision based off, you know, is it going to bring me forward or backwards? And as a founder and an owner of a digital agency, I just think it's going to get me to my goals faster by just being more aware of stress levels and what I'm consuming and how I'm sleeping and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I don't think being healthy and having fun are mutually exclusive things. I think that's just a part of the cultural narrative, particularly in some countries, the UK and Ireland definitely being two of those countries where we're getting better at that. You know, look at the growth of zero alcohol drinks and the fact that you know, I had an experience relatively recently where I had to not drink at a party that I went to because I was driving. And I actually had a great time, a great laugh. And I was like, wow, okay, that's quite interesting.
It can be tough, like in these, you'll always deal with peer pressure. Like I was at a festival last week sober, and lot of people, I actually even like it went to the extent that I asked someone to buy me Heineken Zero, and they came back with a non-Heineken, like a normal a beer, you know, like people just are insulted by the idea. But you know, you have to know, you have to just accept that like you're on your own journey and people might not understand that. And that's the end of it, really.
Absolutely. Well, they'll be that those friends will be happy when you become a billionaire global exactly. agency owner.
That's exactly it, Will. I tell them that every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. So if I'm a brand interested in hiring an external agency to manage my social media accounts, to create content for that, what advice would you give me in seeking out that agency partner?
Yeah, so this is actually something I touched off earlier, which I meant to come back to, was one of the changes we made a few years back was working with clients to film their content. Not having, you know, them do it or have another agency do it. We create the content, like physically work with that client. And that's where I've seen radical changes. You know, there was a couple of year period where agencies would come in, they would run a social media brand and grow it for a client without ever meeting that client. And my clients are with me for a long time for the sole reason that we see each other, you know, and that's so important when you're working with an agency. I personally think that it's really important you have a person-to-person relationship with the agency, with someone in that agency, because there's a lot of complexities to business. And until you stand in the premises of that business or stand with the product or understand the service, it's very hard for the agency to relay that information. So, you know, if I was to say my top tip for working with an agency, just go for a coffee with them and hear them out and have a relationship.
Yeah. Again, don't do it as sort of an arm's length thing, just to tick a box. Social's done. We've got the agency. It's a relationship, isn't it? Definitely. Yeah.
And I spend, you know, I would say probably 90% of the clients I sign up have had a poor experience with an agency. And I'll always say, well, what's the poor experience you've had? And it's always, we couldn't reach them. We didn't know, like they didn't understand our brand. Like we felt like there was something missing. And I think the way we've set our agency up is just, that is an emotion that client will never feel. And because they never feel that, we have good success.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely chimes with my experience. Okay, so I think you're in a pretty good position where you can see what's happening in social media at the moment. If I forced you to get your crystal ball out, where do you think social media might be in a year or two?
There's no doubt about it that the algorithms are getting smarter, and with the use of AI and ChatGPT and stuff, it's starting to really take away the demand for great copy, and it's taking away the demand for like super heightened targeting and stuff like that when it comes to ads. What's really important is just how frequent you create content, how quick you can respond to the knowledge that something is working for your brand. So let's say you post a video and you notice you figure out what it is that made that video go really well, and then going and making a video very similar, that ability to just move fast. So that's why I'm talking about having a relationship with your agency, that that you do see them and they make content for you, because that gives you that ability to jump on things fast. I think the brands that are on top of their content creation, and have it down to a T, are the ones in the next couple of years that are going to see substantial growth on whatever platform they tackle.
Yeah. Talking to you, I get the impression that you're a big fan of testing, experimentation, and an iterative approach of just constantly finding what works a bit better and doing more of that and following that, just letting that lead you, right?
that's it. Like, if you've listened to my journey so far about like where I've started to where I am now, that has been testing. You know, I'm a big fan of testing. So like, I've never claimed to be a social media guru or anything like that. All I do is I have the ability and the confidence to say to the client, we're going to try this. If it fails, we're going to try a different way. And we just do that all the time. You know, we do that in the content creation. We ask questions of, will we film this on mobile or will we film this on professional DSLR? Or what performs better? Will we put a person in front of the camera or will we take a person away from the camera? Will we put this on Instagram or TikTok? Will we target males or females? And we just target, tweak, change things the whole time and start to really build a picture as to what's doing well on social. And that approach is really important because there's so many moving parts with social media and it is always changing. So you need to be always testing.
Yes, true. Well, our time is almost up. The hour flew by. And I'm going to end, as I almost always do, by asking you for your top tips.
Yep.
I don't know if you've thought about this at all, but it's fine. I'm sure it sounds like they'll come quite naturally. So could you give us 3 to 5 top tips for our listeners on how to keep an even keel, stay mentally balanced and well when working on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. I have done a bit of thought into this because I didn't want to give any bad advice, essentially. But I think when it comes to maintaining a great relationship with social, it's just realizing, well, firstly, that perfection just doesn't exist, you know. And you can spend 10 hours on a piece of content or 1 hour on a piece of content, but chasing perfection, but just realizing that like social media moves fast and that it's just about, you know, getting 90% of the way there and then just posting it, you know, not waiting on the final kind of piece of perfection. And realizing that you don't need to be on every platform at all times and on everything that comes out, you know. We haven't had the privilege in Ireland right now, but the new Instagram platform, is it Trends or
Threads?
Threads has come out. You know, that's a lot of people are going to feel the need to be on that if they do have access in their country. And firstly, I think it's really important to question, you know, do I need to be there or do I have the capacity to be there? You know, you know, if TikTok's not for you, then don't be there. If it is for you, then maybe look into it. So, you know, realizing that you don't have to be in everywhere at once is an important one for the balance. And then, you know, lastly, just realizing it, social media never stops, but you need to stop. So have your switch off point, you know, and have a good section of the day where you're not near the phone.
Yes, absolutely. Amen to that. Cool. Zach, thanks so much. That was very interesting chat. I feel like I've learned a lot. Of course, I do have one final question for you. Just tell listeners where they can find and connect with you online.
Yeah, absolutely. So LinkedIn is probably the place I talk most social or most digital stuff and social. So Zachary O'Rourke, or our business website is socialdirectionsagency.com. So you can find me in both those places.
We will do. Thanks very much, Zach. Really appreciate it. A quick note to say that I'll be hosting a 4-part webinar series on how to create your digital marketing plan for 2024 with the help of AI. It starts on the 28th of September, and there's a discount code just for you, our podcast listeners, DMIPODQ4. You can grab that discount code in this episode's show notes, along with a link to book your place. Thanks for listening, and I hope to see you there.